We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome back. Or, if it's your first episode, welcome. My name is Matt, and I will be the host today of The Bearer of Weird News. I hope you're well, and I hope whatever condition you're in, whatever country you're in, that things are going okay, whether you're returning to work, whether you're still working from home, whether your state has gone into extended lockdown measures, or whether the pandemic is really getting out of control. I hope you are all looking after yourselves and being very sensible, which, if you're listening to this, I would like to think makes you sensible. But let's get into it. I am about to be the bearer of weird news. Let's start with something light. Public art news. A public artwork commemorating the coronavirus outbreak is set to be built on Sydney's northern beaches after the local council approved spending of more than $100,000 to help support the arts community. The local political party being Your Northern Beaches Independent Team, a group not affiliated with either of the major parties, so there's no easy stereotypes within reach for a joke. In a response to commonly asked questions, Mayor Michael Regan addressed public concerns about what the project might look like. That concern largely triggered by photoshopped images of giant germ sculptures on a beach with a $1 million price tag, by silently screaming, "Guys, have none of you been on the internet before? We are trying to be respectful, not put up a statue of a slave owner." Councillor Penny Philpott, who put forward the proposal, said it was intended to remember as a narrative how the Northern Beaches community responded to the COVID-19 pandemic, and as the Northern Beaches electorate contains Manly Beach, it is fair to assume the artwork will just be thousands and thousands of statues of people flouting safety recommendations just by being on the beach during a pandemic. No official design has been landed on as yet, so we here at the Weird News, we'd like to pitch a few. A. Two people fighting over a toilet paper in a supermarket aisle. The fighters would be surrounded by shopping trolleys shaped in a Thunderdome-esque contraption. B. A person sitting in their home, alone, two screens up. One permanently playing Tiger King on loop, the other displaying some porn. C. A giant face mask being left unworn. D. Two housemates starting a podcast. E. A group of essential workers socially distanced and worried in a train carriage. F. A minimum wage worker being lifted out of poverty for the first time ever by government stimulus. G. A homeless person counting down the days until the support is taken away and they are put back on the street. H. A phone not downloading the COVID safe app, but pubs being reopened anyway. So, you know, lots of good choices there. I mean, to be honest, it's really just good to see someone in politics supporting the arts. And for those of you who are still doubting the necessity of this, I ask, why not? The impact of the virus has been undeniable. Many people have died, and it is a tragedy. But from tragedy, we create. We make art. Not to get all Dead Poet Society on you, but I have read thousands of Facebook posts about the proficiency of one William Shakespeare, a relatively unknown writer at the time, I assume, or else this wouldn't really be a notable achievement, writing an entire play while in quarantine. He wasn't even slightly tempted by the docu-text, The Striped Cat King. Coronavirus has saved thousands of people from having to deal with shit customers shouting at them daily, has lifted basic workers and welfare recipients above the poverty line, and it has given homes to the homeless. We have seen wonders that we will never see again. We should be celebrating this time that the Liberal government, with capital L, was forced to actually be a Liberal government, with a little L, and do a major socialism, despite the fact that they said that they never would. Moving on to, oh no shit news now. Relatively new tech company and hopeful startup, Google. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Google? Googly. Anyway, well, they have gotten off to a bit of a rough start as they are being sued in the US over claims that they illegally invaded the privacy of users by tracking people even when they're browsing in porn mode. Oh, sorry, that should read private mode. The browser extension Incognito. The class action wants at least $5 billion from Google and their parent company Alphabet, who announced in quarter 3 of 2019 earnings of $40.49 billion. So it should be a pretty easy bill to cover. The proposed class action likely includes millions of Google users who, since 1st of June 2016, browsed the internet in porn mode. And if they manage to get that $5 billion settlement, that should translate into a few dollars each for the millions of users. It's a pretty standard trade-off for most of us when it comes to dealing with large companies and our dignity. To be honest, most of the time we don't even get a few dollars when it comes to giving away all our private information. So this, if anything, is an upgrade. The search engine denies this is illegal and says it is upfront about the data it collects in this mode, relying on the commonly understood principle that the internet is like systemic dysfunction, everywhere, always, forever. And the standing legal precedent, takers keepers, losers weepers, as set down in the landmark case, keepers versus losers. I believe this was the case that allowed Facebook to turn from toxic website that was built to rate hotness of your fellow classmates into toxic website that allows you to rate opinions, memes, baby photos, hopes, dreams, and late night thoughts of your friends and families, and anyone else still foolish enough to be on the site. Moving on, classism news now. A New South Wales childcare operator in jail over a $3.6 million government benefits fraud has failed to overturn her conviction after judges said that the term bogan was not a racist description. Melissa Jade Higgins contended her guilty verdict should be set aside because multiple jurors may have extended bias against her in the form of racist and derogatory comments during her 2016 trial. One juror recalled more than one person saying, "How can a bogan rip off the system like this?" and, "Oh my god, how is someone from the country able to outsmart the government?" The judge agreed, saying that while the remark may be considered unfortunate, it bore no logical connection to the suggestion of prejudgment or bias. Bit of a wide leap there, but hey, they stuck the landing, I guess. They said, "To the contrary, some of the material suggests that one or more of the members of the jury may have thought the applicant's lack of sophistication was a quality. I take to be implicit in the description of a person as a bogan made it less likely that they could perpetuate the fraud that was alleged." Meaning he thought that the jury thinking that she was a bogan was actually her superpower. Like he thought she was bitten by some sort of radioactive, socioeconomic downtrodden person and became Super Bogan. In all honesty, at this point, the only identity that Australians have are Bogan and the enemy of the Bogan, the rat dog cunt. Because even though the origins are nebulous at best, and to begin with, it was, according to David Nichols, the author of The Bogan Delusion, an idea that people have, quote, created this creature that is a lesser human being to express their interclass hatred, end quote. The popular website and book you definitely bought for your Secret Santa, but nobody got around to reading because reading is for pussies, and even if it is ostensibly a list of things that you're probably into, but you are both insulted someone would think that you are, and that they would use the word ostensibly because who do they think they are anyway? Things Bogans Like, suggested that a Bogan, quote, today defies income, class, race, creed, gender, and logic, end quote. Meaning that the Bogan is the ultimate identity dream of one Martin Luther King.
Will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
So really, a case for discrimination, and the throwing out of the jury's testimony does not exist. It just can't be made on terms of racial discrimination. I mean, it could probably be made on terms of a classist discrimination, and ironically, this woman would know this if she just hadn't wasted her time learning how to defraud a government system and had read a couple of books. She is rejecting her birthright as an Australian, a country famous for being founded by a colony of bogans, ruled over by ratdog cunts, and its leader, ratdog cunt in bogan clothing, Scott Morrison, is desperately trying to build his entire identity on being one of the boys. Well, being the dad of one of the boys. But he can still get on the beers. With you, the boys, you know, he's still cool. It is such a part of our national identity that it goes back to the first police force, the Night Watch, who were paid in rum. Just the boys getting on a drink. Systemic news now. So, it cannot be denied that we were all surprised at the ability of anything to take our minds off the coronavirus outbreak that is currently happening. But when a Minneapolis police officer kneeled on the neck of citizen George Floyd over the case of a counterfeit $20 note and murdered him, it was the straw that was piled on the back of the camel that had already had its back broken a really long time ago. And unsurprisingly, protests broke out.
Overnight, Minneapolis on fire. Protesters leaving an auto parts store in
flames. They were taken up worldwide as countries with troublesome colonial pasts that have used this public moment to examine their own histories.
300 years after his death, Edward Colston's fall from grace. For centuries, he took pride of place in Bristol, celebrated as a merchant, politician, and philanthropist.
And we here in Australia did some redecorating. Boston Tea Partying some statues into the nearest river. A surprising move from UK residents, given that the last time someone did something like that, there was a bit of a war that followed. It also happened in the US, with statues being torn down all over. And Google Maps, as savvy as they are, has already updated the position of some of those statues. Good work, Google. However, the New Zealand town of Hamilton is just, it's just doing this without any kind of riot. Like, just taking all the fun out of civil disobedience. Now, I don't know much about Hamilton as a place, But from what I understand from doing gigs on the New Zealand comedy circuit, it is the go-to town for a quick punchdown reference to make the hometown crowd feel better, sort of like the Frankston or the Geelong if you're on the Melbourne scene. New Zealand continues to be the overachieving youngest sibling of the colonial family. We see you, New Zealand. We see you. Do you think you're better than us? Because you are. But you aren't allowed to think it. You must only quietly achieve. Australia has this thing about cutting down tall poppies. And don't forget, you used to be a part of us. You are, at your heart, one of us. Whereas here at home, we didn't get quite as enthusiastic, we merely vandalised our statues. Even vandalising some statues from more recent history. With the busts of controversial PMs John Howard and Tony Abbott being vandalised in the aftermath of the recent protests, prompting a discussion about not erasing history by removing statues. Just like all those countries that had statues taken away from them by the Natural History Museum that stopped existing and stopped having an entire history because their statues were gone. I suppose you don't know about that because, as with the above stated problem, they now have no history and don't exist. And in all honesty, if you were to ask most Australians who the statues were of, they probably wouldn't know. Sure, they could Google it, but the majority of us wouldn't even know who to put into Google to find out who the statue is. And a lot of us don't even know who is on the money. Refer to my Bill Gates $10 note conspiracy episode for more information about that. I mean, come on, that's a $10 note. They think Bill Gates is on the $10. It's not like it's a $100 note, a note that you don't see every day. This is a tenner. We look at one of these just about every day. So if people really want to know who the streets are named after, they can Google it. The government, or maybe one of those nationalist groups, can make a website dedicated to honouring the murderers of Indigenous lives. Call it something like Busty Historical Figures. The provocative name is the only way anyone's going to find the site, let's be honest. One statue, which is in discussion for change, is man you have never heard of and first Prime Minister of Australia, Edmund Barton. And while the first Prime Minister of Australia seems like a worthy figure to have as a statue, he even had the jovial nickname Tosspot Toby. How fun is that? Tosspot Toby. Because he liked to drink. Sounds like a real Australian, right? The most Australian to ever Australia. So what else did he do? Well, he was an early supporter of the Federation of the Australian Colonies, leading to Australia actually becoming Australia. Founded the Defence Force and the Commonwealth Public Service, which would go on to introduce nationwide women's suffrage. Sounding pretty good. Sounds like a stand-up dude. He also was supportive of the Immigration Restriction Act. Oh, that doesn't sound very good. I mean, I guess this was back when policies could just have straight-up names, because nobody else had the right to fight back. So, does exactly what it sounds like. It is a act for restricting immigration. And that act would then go on to evolve into the widest Pokemon. Into the White Australia policy. So, where is this one particular statue of Edmund Barton? Somewhere respectful, no doubt, he asked, knowing full well that that wasn't the answer. Oh. It's at an Indigenous burial site? Who thought that was a respectful place for this statue? Now, fortunately, there is a petition on the way, And when asked, Port Macquarie Historical Society President Clive Smith said there was absolutely no reason that it could not be moved. Which is a real relief, because a historical society figure named Clive definitely sounds like the villain of a civil rights biopic. They have some obscure but inconsequential piece of knowledge about the history of the village, like, oh, this is the very spot that Edmund Barton ate his first burrito. He ate it while plotting the statue of himself that will permanently oversee the indigenous burial ground. You know, real momentous historical event there. So statues are all over Twitter at the moment. It's a real cultural moment for people who have done super touristy visits, as that obscure photo of a statue that got zero likes previously can be repurposed into a revolution. Not to mention, all these years, we've been calling pigeons sky rats. But they were the ones leading the fight in colonialist, racist statue removal. All hail, Comrade Sky Rat. But I'm getting distracted. Super easy to get distracted. Let's focus on home. Let's focus on a real moment from home. So, going back a little bit, on June 2nd, roughly a week after the death of George Floyd and the protests that followed, some very uncomfortable footage surfaced of a New South Wales police officer very roughly arresting an Indigenous boy.
It doesn't matter where you're from.
She swore, so what? If you got your police, you shouldn't be swearing at all.
It's in America.
I didn't say that at all, mate. Yes, you do. You need to open up your ears.
What? I heard you from over here. I don't need to open up my ears.
There you go. No. You did not say that.
I'm cracking your f***ing door, bro.
What was that? What was that? Turn around if I can't see that. Come here.
What? Oi! What the f***?
Slammed him on the face.
You just slammed him on his face. Oi!
What the f*** is this? What the f*** is this?
What? He's in pain, bro. I've never heard that.
You can see the officer went to the Cobra Kai school for arresting youths and 80s villainy.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that?
No sensei.
No mercy.
It came out later that the child had been a little mouthy to the officer, but in all honesty, I've been mouthy to officers before, and very rarely do I get the Cobra Kai treatment. So little, in fact, that one of the very few instances in which it did happen, I spent a good amount of time touring, telling as many people as I could about it, because it was so uncommon for me.
And I decided to take a more respectful tactic this time. I say, no! See ya! This arm here is going to be my downfall. Takes that arm, twists it, puts it behind my back, slams it down to the ground, gets good knee moise, handcuffs. I make my way back up onto my butt, and then he asks to see my dick kid.
But after that incident and some public outcry, the cop was investigated over the arrest by the New South Wales police force. I think that so obviously shouldn't happen that they gave that opinion to 8-year-old Lisa Simpson.
I mean, if you're the police, who will police the police?
And that investigation turned up some shocking results. Turns out, after an intense internal investigation, the cop who arrested the Indigenous teen was charged with having a bad day. This is not uncommon. There have been countless headlines about instances of this being a terrible idea. This is why they have never made a police show that centres around the internal investigations of the police. And they've made a lot of shows about increasingly obscure categories. There's funny cops, highway cops, existential cops, wheelchair cops, lady cops, country cops, water cops, ghost cops, computer cops, but no internal affairs cops. That show would be more predictable than an episode of Scooby-Doo. Remember, it is always the angry capitalist.
And I'd have done it too, if you kids hadn't come along.
And I'd have found it if it wasn't for you snoopers.
You blasted kids. Why didn't you mind your own business?
Yes, might have gotten away with it too. If it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
Blasted meddling kids.
And it would have been mine if it hadn't been for those meddling kids.
And I would have made millions if it hadn't been for you meddling kids.
Meddling young fools. Would have gotten away with a king's ransom.
And I wish you'd have minded your own business.
Well, in this case, it's police business.
But a bad day, hey? Bad day. Oh, man. I cannot wait to return to work so that I can have my next bad day at work. The bar has been set pretty low for acceptable behaviour for someone mouthing off at you at work. I mean, the bar police have to leap over shouldn't be lower than the standard set by Shazza at the Bottle-O. And I have seen some rough moments inside a Bottle-O. Now look, if I had to choose who could exercise excessive force and leg sweeping on anyone they interact with, and my options were the police or the Bottle-O attendant, I'm going Bottle-O attendant every time. Following in the footsteps of our American counterparts, Australian capital cities and small towns alike saw people defying lockdown and risking everything for the future by taking to the streets to protest the systemic oppression of people, in this particular instance, black lives. The response from our exalted leader and primest of all the ministers, Scott Morrison, was to publicly declare Australia shouldn't import American-style Black Lives Matter protests. Rather, we should keep our relationship with America at a safe, socially distant space, ensuring that we don't get infected with such crazy radical ideas as equality, free speech, and forming an independent state. Rather, we can keep our identity uniquely Australian, and only ape the most important aspects of American culture, like needless and endless war in the Middle East, neoliberalism, and the suppression of native cultures and landmarks. In fact, so committed are we to this lifestyle choice that we have gone ahead and let mining multinational Rio Tinto blow up an important Indigenous landmark, or rather, at least 40, and maybe as many as 86 significant Aboriginal sites in the central Pilbara region of Western Australia. Because if you are going to destroy a culture, you go big or you go home. These were sites that a BHP archaeological survey identified as containing rock shelters that were occupied between 10,000 and 15,000 years ago, and noted that evidence in the broader area showed occupation of the surrounding landscape has been ongoing for approximately 40,000 years, making the destruction of the site consistent with Australian attitudes and sentiment towards the stolen generation, which ended a mere 50 years ago, and white Australians are always telling Indigenous people to get over it, and wondering why they'd still be talking about it when it happened so long ago. And all this happened during Reconciliation Week, a barely recognised week intended to celebrate Indigenous history and culture in Australia and foster reconciliation discussion and activities. Getting screwed over by white Australians is now a significant part of Indigenous culture, so it seems Rio Tinto has gotten on board with celebrations. But Angry Dad, who wants the neighbours to go to bed already because he has to be up early for church in the morning, and Prime Minister Scott Morrison has demanded an end to further Black Lives Matter protests, saying some protests have been hijacked by left-wing movements and demonstrators at future events should be charged. Despite that same day proudly announcing that AFL crowds of 10,000 would be allowed to return to stadiums of seating of roughly 40,000. Even though we haven't even gotten close to that magic 40% number we apparently needed to download the COVID Safe app. Or else, we wouldn't be getting the pubs back. Remember that empty threat when the Prime Minister told us that if we didn't download a tracing app, that the pubs wouldn't open again? Whatever happened to that, Morrison? Oh, what's that? It never really worked. And it had undisclosed issues in as many as 25% of phones? Huh. Weird how we don't talk about that. Okay, so some of us did a protest. So now seems we will be punished. He must be thinking, if 10,000 people can gather for civil rights, then they can gather for doing an economy, especially if that economy is a sports-related economy. It's sort of like a yin and yang. Though, given the size of the Hillsong gatherings, it would not surprise me to find out that he was doing this all so that he could make the reality of his pre-lockdown promise to go to the church and then go to the rugby. Imagine how long it is going to take to get 10,000 people into a stadium while safely observing social distancing. It's basically turned the stadium into an airport. Come to think of it, every business is an airport now. You must arrive 3 hours early, get your temperature checked, and don't you dare drink or eat anything because the public toilets will be a nightmare. People will be making money selling snacks to the queue out of the Apple store. But really, I suspect that he's pushing this whole thing because New Zealand is already opening, and his number one strategy for this whole pandemic has been to copy everything Auntie Jacinda does. So obviously, we must be open too, because New Zealand is open. Essentially, we are the kid cheating off the kid next to us in the biggest test that we've ever taken, but we failed to realise that the kid next to us is a full page ahead. But more importantly, a few weeks back, when there were more active cases, and the lockdown was seemingly more imperative, there was a protest against 5G. A protest? Well, best get the PM out here. He's not going to be happy with that. He definitely has made his position on protests very clear. He's going to be livid. All right, let's have a look at what he said. Let's have a look at what his official statement was. Oh, it's a free country. Huh. I mean, don't get me wrong, Morrison. I want to get rid of the anti-5G crowd as much as anybody, and maybe gathering them all together so that they'll infect each other is a great way to do that. But this approach, where you approve the 5G protest but disapprove a Black Lives Matter protest, sure comes off as, how do I put this delicately, blatantly racist. Maybe that's something you should think about. So the New South Wales Police Minister seems to be on board with this approach, saying protests of larger than 10 could be deemed illegal, which is a strong stance for a police force to take when they were the only state to surround and attack protesters without provocation. I mean, come on, even troubled sibling Queensland managed to make a protest a peaceful event, handing out masks to protesters so that they would be safe. And what are the results of these protests been? Well, let's have a look at some of the headlines. Oh, no. This is not good. Black Lives Matter protester has come down with COVID. What's that? There were 7 other cases on the same day. So then why are we only focusing on the Black Lives Matter protester in this headline? Who wrote this? Oh, the name isn't given in the article. Okay, that's weird. And I mean, let's be honest, it's likely an editor's choice to put that title because it's a free news source and it needs to make its money by generating a little bit of outrage at the expense of this movement. So the press coverage of the newest outbreaks in Victoria have been very telling about the narrative that a few people want to see. Now have a look at this one. Again, highlighting second Black Lives Matter protester among 12 new cases. Why wasn't the headline here 12 new cases? Why did it only mention specifically that one of them was a Black Lives Matter protest? And let's have a look here. We've got, again, highlighting the Black Lives Matter protester. Yep, all right. So in this article, this protester was one of 18 cases that day, but those other 17 cases were not mentioned in the headline. Oh, and let's have a look here. Third Black Lives protester among Victoria, one of 19 cases. Okay, so one of 19 cases. So they've acknowledged that there are other cases, but they didn't bother to highlight what the other cases were. As of this recording, there are 116 active cases in Victoria, and of those 116, 3 have been people who attended a Black Lives Matter protest. That's a statistically insignificant percentage. I mean, you'll get a higher number of cases related to a single family than you would from people who showed up to these protests. And that can change at any moment. And I'm happy to accept that's basically probably is what's going to happen. But it does underpin the narrative that we do and don't want to tell. There's a problem that needs addressing. And there's something that we are not keen to acknowledge. So have a look here. This Sydney councillor claims that the acknowledgement of country divides us more. And in an email, he said, however, if you were to suggest that we should also acknowledge people brought against their will from England in 1788 and European settlement for making our country what it is today, plus those who fought and died for us, then yeah, I would agree. Going on to ask this very reasonable question, how do you know they didn't wipe out another race when they arrived 70,000 years ago? I mean, he's gone full all theoretical genocides matter on the issue. Seems he is preparing to break away from the party and start his own political party, the Unwilling Criminals, European Settlers, and Potential Indigenous Genociders Party, running on the very catchy slogan, Make Australia What It Is. No wonder the New South Wales cops were the only group to cause trouble when they are doing mock versions of the Acknowledgement of Country at their Christmas party, replacing all references to Indigenous people with references to the tactical unit. Man, it sounds like these guys should be the personal guard of that Sydney councillor. Real, true white knights coming to the rescue here, putting the white in white knight. Then we went out and did this. We gave Tony, Remote Communities Are a Lifestyle Choice Abbott, the Queen's Honour for Indigenous Service and Border Control. Now, unless we are saying that Abbott's strict border measures are to stop another group of interlopers from coming in and taking the land that the Indigenous people have gotten back, thus starting the cycle of war all over again, then maybe I can get behind an award if that were the case. But it's not. And unsurprisingly, Pauline Hanson has shown up all upset that nobody has talked about her for like a few days. So she fired up the perpetual blunder machine that she calls a mouth and attempted to pass an All Lives Matter motion in Parliament. Now, we don't know what she wanted to include specifically, as she was almost unanimously voted down from causing an unnecessary and racist distraction, with the only exception being Conservative Senator Jim Molan, who walked out saying all senators should have the right to have their opinions heard. A strong take to have, given that Molan was an Abbott government special envoy for Operation Sovereign Borders and has been credited as the architect of the Stop the Boats campaign, which is as good as being credited as being the architect of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. So I guess what he was saying was all opinions matter? It's likely she was just upset because nobody came to her aid when she did prison. There were no riots, nobody took to the streets, except maybe to cheer and to find a friend to cheers a beer. If she were to stop and look around, the senator would find plenty of white people being outraged, often by things that they haven't thought through all that well. We, however, have heard enough from Senator Chicken Little. She is using her superpower, the power of distraction, to distract us, and we must not get distracted from the real issues. Oh, but look, even Hello Kitty and Gudemana are good allies. I mean, as much as a company can be a good ally, and did you hear? Cops has been cancelled. Oh, Cops has been cancelled after the violence of the protests. I mean, they were telling us the whole time. They chose the song with the lyrics, bad boys, bad boys. That was the only message that the producers took from a song about growing up as a teenager, trying to make sense of a world and becoming semi-aggressive in the process. And all they took was, bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do when they come for you? Oh, and look at this. Netflix has removed Chris Lee's show due to blackface. Oh, and also David Williams and Matt Lucas's Come Fly With Me and Little Britain have been taken down due to insensitive content, mostly blackface. So while in their countries of origin, the shows in question were pretty well known. If we are being fair to Netflix, I think it is fair to assume that anything made post The Jazz Singer, unless it was an autobiography of Al Jolson, of course, wouldn't have people with blackface. So when this foreign company rolled in and picked up a few local shows to fill in KPIs regarding local content, they just picked up things that they heard were popular. After all, blackface was a ceremonial white person activity reserved for special occasions, like Halloween, also known as Blackface Christmas, or an appearance on Red Faces. In the same way, cultural appropriation was supposed to be reserved purely for music festivals, where we could blame it on the drugs. Some people, and by people I mean attention-seeking bots, designed to create maximum outrage for ad revenue, and mind you, not the show's creators. They have made their money and are wisely shutting up while the shutting up is good, have argued cancelling the shows is the end of reason. Supposedly, instead, Joe Hildebrand would have these alternatives put in place. As Netflix is famous for its obscure listings, it can group all of the controversial shows together under the banner Surprisingly Late Use of Blackface. Or we can create a website akin to Does the Dog Die? It's called Is There Blackface? It will have subsections for other forms of offense like white girl wearing Native American headdress, gay face, which is when a straight actor plays an over-the-top gay stereotype, Scarlett Johansson, which is when a white person plays an Asian, a tree, or an animal, because although Does the Dog Die has really branched out to include all sorts of triggers and fears, like are there bugs, or a dragon dies, or there's farting and spitting, it does fail to list dressing as another race. Ha! Gotcha, Does the Dog Die? You're cancelled. Ah, shit. I'm distracted again. Sorry. It's very hard to focus because, you know, systemic issues are much harder than pop cultural issues, and they're much, much harder to fix, whereas pop cultural issues tend to go away quite quickly. All right, let's keep this rolling. Okay. Now, on to man who has appeared so many times in this story that I don't have a new joke for him, and Prime Minister Scott Morrison. He was talking about the Black Lives Matter protests, and as his representative for the Ministry of Putting Your Foot in Your Mouth was out, he figured he would be like most Australians and do two jobs to get by, saying that there was no slavery in Australia. Okay, now, technically this is true, but that is a massive technically. And realistically, on the issue of indentured servitude, slavery, and forced labor, semantics is not where you want to land. Semantics are the last resort of losing a battle on Reddit. They're not going to change history. But for the sake of argument, in Australia, the practice was actually called blackbirding, as Alexander Dalinar will happily attest to. When asked whether the practice of blackbirding could be considered slavery, Morrison told reporters he did not want to get into the History Wars, which is the worst prequel of the film set in the extended Wars universe. Those include Civil War, Charlie Wilson's War, and Star Wars. This was a deflecting statement that showed he had never heard the term before. Like most white Australians, I would bet, I certainly had never heard the term before. So let me elaborate. Blackbirding is a term used to describe the practice of coercing, a term so mild that the grammar corrector on Google Docs keeps requesting that I change it to forcing people to work as indentured labourers, often through deception or force. It was common throughout the Pacific in the 19th century, the etymology of which is that the term may have been formed directly as a contraction of blackbird catching. Blackbird was a super respectful slang term used for local indigenous people. So, blackbirding stopped in 1901 with the introduction of the White Australia Policy. So one of those historical moments that, while it is progress, because we're no longer blackbirding people, it's not exactly the kind of progress you celebrate, like overthrowing a dictator, only to replace him with a puppet emperor. Then, subsequently, the Pacific Labour Act was introduced, which was designed to facilitate the mass deportation of South Sea Islanders working in Queensland's sugar industry. 15% of those blackbirded to Australia died from exposure to foreign illness, malnutrition, mistreatment, and of those who lived, some were sent home to the wrong island, but some managed to stay in Australia. So, no slavery, per se, but it wasn't exactly a haven out here for non-white people. He would eventually apologize, acknowledging that there have been all sorts of hideous practices that have taken place, and so I'm not denying any of that. Cool. Real cool of you to not deny some bad stuff happened. But you know, he's not denying it. He's not denying bad stuff happened, so don't be stupid. Don't be stupid and risk your life to highlight the struggles of Indigenous people, because the PM already knows. You're just embarrassing yourselves, really. He's all over it. And I'm sure he is as outraged as you are and is getting right onto doing something about it. Oh, hey, look, diverse skin tone Band-Aids from Band-Aid. And it's only taken 100 years. I mean, that's pretty fast on the acknowledging things are missing from history timeline, you know, as far as companies go. Now we're on to the apology desk for our updates on apology news. It's been a busy time for the PM recently, having just apologised for the insensitive comments he made about Australia's history in the last story. He has also been forced to apologise officially for the ridiculousness that is the Robo Debt scandal. And after being pipped to the post by a man in the High Castle alternative universe, Prime Minister Bill Shorten.
I refer to the Prime Minister's illegal Robo Debt scheme. Cancer-suffering grandfather Raymond had to sell his house and move into his shed to afford medical treatment. He says debt collectors ripped him to shreds over a $2,300 robo-debt while he was in hospital. Why won't the government apologise to Mr Murphy and thousands of other Australians who they hounded with their unlawful robo-debt scheme?
And with the civil lawsuit going ahead still against the robo-debt, for more information check out my last episode, The Life and Death of Robo-debt, he needed a newsworthy story that would distract from the fact that the robo-debt total is said to have exceeded $1 billion. Hang on, wait, what?
Mr Speaker, the business of raising and recovering debts on behalf of taxpayers is a difficult job. And it deals with Australians in many very sensitive circumstances. And of course, I would deeply regret any hardship that has been caused to people in the conduct of that activity. The government has many difficult jobs that it has to do dealing with Australians in very sensitive circumstances, and that is true particularly at this time. And it is our instruction that we would hope that all agents of the government, when pursuing the debt recovery option, that they would be sensitive to people's circumstances. And in relation to the particular gentleman that you referred to, that is a very distressing situation that you've raised. And I would apologise to any hurt or harm in the way that the government has dealt with that issue, and to anyone else who's find themselves in those situations. But the issue, Mr Speaker, is the one of showing how the government can best do this. And where there are lessons to be learned here, they will.
Oh, well, that certainly sounded very apologetic. It had all the tones of an apology, and he did say the word apology, and it was predicated by the clause that I would, and at no point actually does say the actual apology. But mostly he sounds like he's apologising to the Robodebt staff and the fact that they made the job hard to do, and that they will learn to take your money in a more proper and true fashion. Don't you dare think that we haven't learned many hard and important lessons from this Robodebt scandal. I mean, mostly they're about trusting robots. So that'll be some more slashes to the science budget for bringing us these faulty robots. You better believe that. But what was that about Robodebt total exceeding 1 billion possibly? Can we have a look at the Liberal Party slogan? Can we just get that up? Can anybody? Yep, there it is. A stronger economy, a secure future, building our economy, securing your future. Ooh, that's a mouthful. I mean, it's a mouthful of fancy sounding garbage, but it's still a mouthful. I mean, Robodebt has been a minimum $1 billion bungle, maybe even as high as $2 billion. Not to mention the fact that there was this $60 billion overestimation of JobKeeper program. And these guys have the audacity to get snippy at a bunch of business students for messing up some math. Business students are just getting ready for the real-life world of business by not paying what they owe. It's effectively an internship at this point, but the Liberals. The Liberals are already drafting a plan to reboot Robodebt. It's a ballsy play to have a $60 billion economic fuck-up and still say to others, hey, what's $60 billion between friends? You, on the other hand, you are bad at managing money and you need to pay us. And finally, on to wage theft news. Victorian Premier and socialist in centrist clothing, Dan Andrews, has passed anti-wage theft laws in Victoria. Now, for those of you unaware, wage theft is the hottest new buzzword, the newest business trend. I am expecting that after seeing the large volume of businesses that have been getting on board, you will be seeing a TED Talk by George Calambaras titled Bad Bookkeeping and Other Ways to Make Money Off Your Poor Before You Declare Bankruptcy. I mean, the title isn't very subtle, but to be fair to him, he put all of his energy into the creative accounting portion of his talk. There have been many revelations of historic and ongoing wage theft by companies like McDonald's, the cheaper the better, Qantas, the broken spirit of Australia, Bunnings, lowest prices are just the beginning, Coles, wage thefts are happening at Coles, Woolworths, Australia's wage theft people, Officeworks, big ideas, lowest wages, Target, expect more, pay less. I mean, I didn't even have to change that one. Those are literally the words of their slogan. It's essentially just a warning to the staff. Also, some companies with harder slogans to manipulate or no slogan at all, such as the Super Retail Group, Grilled, the ABC, Rockpool Dining Group, which is owned by celebrity chef Neil Perry, Michael Hill, the Maid Establishment, which is owned by celebrity chef George Calambaras, Sunglass Hut, and 7-Eleven. If you want to have a crack at the slogans, send me your best ones in the comments. Not to mention that in the finance industry, the Commonwealth Bank is making an estimated $53.1 million in back payments after a 2018 review identified both over and under payments. Nothing like making fat stacks off your workers' back while secretly laundering terrorist money. Which bank would do that? Most banks, really, as the Royal Commission pointed out. Now, the Federal Attorney General, Christian Porter, pointed out that even though the vast majority of underpayments were not deliberate, this did not alleviate the seriousness of the offence or make it excusable. In fact, he dropped a sick burn when he said it bordered on negligence in the case of big companies that should, at the very least, be capable of following workplace law. The new legislation does not kick in until mid-next year, with the government arguing this gives employers 12 months to prepare themselves. Exactly 12 more months warning than Robodebt sufferers were given. Australian businesses found guilty could face $1 million fines and be forced to display public notice of their crimes. I, for one, am all for this. We already publicly shame restaurants for unclean kitchens with a letter grade, like they're in high school. We should shame more businesses. I want warnings on websites for companies that don't pay their taxes. Let's use pop-ups for good for once. You can get your boner pills and your scantily clad casino-based RPG adventure games in your own time. We need to be more like the Scooby Gang. We have capitalists to publicly shame. We should, while we're at it, just tattoo Jeff Bezos's bald head with the entirety of the Amazon atrocity list. Though we may need to give him a larger head, as the list is pretty long. Maybe he can just outsource some of his tattoos to his workers. They seem to carry the burden of most of his issues. The legislation could also see directors facing disqualification and up to 10 years imprisonment as punishment, which is long overdue. If we start locking up more white-collar criminals, they'll pay to improve the quality of the prisons that they're going to be living in for a while. The Fair Work Ombudsman surveys have shown around half of all hospitality businesses are non-compliant with labour laws, and I have never seen a better argument for businesses paying above the minimum wage. Because it sounds like they expect businesses will shave a little bit off the top. It's built into the survival rate of new businesses. Much like anyone who steals from a supermarket will tell you, the prices are raised as if they expect a little shoplifting. It's built into the system, man. So with that in mind, we raise the minimum pay and we get people to pay above that minimum pay. And then after businesses have done their expected thieving from their employees can still eat and live at a house. And that way, everybody wins. Oh, thank you for staying. Thank you for listening. This has been a long one. And I appreciate your time every time if you're hanging around to the end. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're looking after yourselves. If you did enjoy it and you think someone else will enjoy it, share it. Send it around. I feel like it's the best way to help us out, and it's the best way to keep this thing afloat and to let me know that it's worth still doing is if you guys could share it with a friend or online, social media, whatever it is. All those places. Look after yourselves, guys. I hope you're staying safe out there. And I'll see you next time.